This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Thank you so much, everybody, for being here today. I'm really, really grateful for this opportunity to come and chat. And I'm glad we have a little bit of an intimate group because, just fair warning, this is going to be a pretty interactive conversation. So less lecture-y today and a little bit more time for y'all to discuss the material amongst yourselves with a little bit of lecture thrown in there too. So just really grateful to be here. So just to add a tiny bit to Ellen's wonderful introduction, I did want to make a disclaimer that I am here representing myself and my personal and professional experiences. So I am certainly not representing St. David's Vestry as a whole, for example. I don't think Father Chuck would like that very much. He is in Malawi, but I'm not going to push it too much. So I wanted to make that disclaimer first and foremost. And I also wanted to mention that today I am representing myself in another way. And so I think sometimes when we talk about minority communities, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender folks, sometimes we can make this assumption that one person maybe speaks for the community, and that is not a thing. So, for example, I am a queer cisgender woman who's married to a trans man. It doesn't mean everything I say today represents every cisgender white woman who is married to a trans man. So, just wanted to make that disclaimer. And then the last quick disclaimer I wanted to make is throughout this conversation, I might use the word queer. And I want to just make a quick note that that is a reclaimed term. So what that means is that it used to be a slur, a really nasty slur. And some folks in the community still consider it a slur, right? And some folks who are allies are very uncomfortable using that term, which is totally fine. But I will say that queer is a label that really works for me. And I will say that a lot of people of younger generations, and we are going to talk a fair amount about youth throughout this presentation, are very comfortable with that word and have reclaimed it and use it pretty freely. So I just wanted to make that quick note. So I'm super grateful that Caden agreed to join me for this presentation today. So Caden, I'm curious, anything you want to add to the introduction?
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. As Sarah noted, there's really no cookie-cutter experience for people in the LGBT community. So while you'll see in this presentation common themes, not everyone's story is the same. So please keep that in mind. Also, I think it's important to know pronouns. So, for example, my pronouns are he, him, and they, them. And then one other thing I'd like to add, which is the importance of context. So I'm coming today with a lot of privilege behind me, the privilege of being white, the privilege of presenting as masculine, the privilege of having the opportunity to be educated and to come from a community that supports me.
Thank you. Yeah, so just a brief note that this is a very introductory presentation. So this is just going to be a jumping off point. We don't have a ton of time together today. We're going to try and cover the basics as best we can. And so that's really our goal. We are going to be talking about gender and sexuality, but I will note that we're going to focus a little bit more on gender and gender identity, just because that's a pretty hot topic these days, and we wanted to make sure you all came away with some knowledge about that. And we are going to provide some resources at the end of the presentation. So if you want to dig in further, or maybe we can talk about next steps as a community to continue having these conversations. So with that, I would love to say, too, my pronouns are she, her, hers. And Caden is going to talk about the title of the presentation as well.
Yeah. So the best way to start this is really to talk about the title. Who do people say I am? This question makes me think about a time when I was in college, and I was walking down the road, and someone stopped their car and shouted out at me, "Hey, Caden, what are you?" Now, while the intent may have been a little malicious, it was a good question. What am I? Who am I? It's a little bit of an existential crisis, admittedly, but it's a question that we all find ourselves asking throughout significant points in our life. So who do people say I am is coming specifically from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verse 27, when Jesus asked the disciples how the world views Jesus. Theologian Jan Sorry, guys. Small print.
I'm so sorry.
Theologian Jan Olive Henriksen, in their work Desire, Gift, and Recognition, Christology and Postmodern Philosophy, posits that this question Jesus asks has less to do with insecurity of identity, which was more my case, but instead, the story, quote, becomes the function of showing that Jesus transcends the pre-given conceptions of identity, and that every time the question is asked, we get an answer, but a different one. And simultaneously, we realize that there is more to be said than what is explicitly said. There are no exhaustive terms, no means for establishing a final or definite identity for this person, just as there are none for anyone else, end quote. So this passage from Mark, in my mind, beautifully illustrates for us the multiplicity of identity that comes with being made in the image of God. It speaks to the queerness of Jesus and the queerness of humanity. Today, as we explore an introduction to gender and sexuality, we charge you with considering the wonder of being made in God's image and how the reality and fluidity of that image is very diverse.
Just gonna let that sit for a minute. I'm a therapist, so I like to allow for silence. And I just think that's beautiful. So, with that, we are going to dig into some nitty-gritty aspects of identity in the first two activities that we're going to do together. So the very first one is our gender questionnaire. So hopefully all of you have a handout that we've provided. There's also pens on the back table if y'all need them. And so take a moment if you don't have a handout or a pen. And you don't necessarily need a pen, but if you like to take notes and that's how you learn best, feel free. I have some out youth pens that are swag back there, so feel free to take those and enjoy them. So what I'm going to invite y'all to do is, in as natural a way as possible, pair up with the person next to you. You can do groups of three if you would like to, kind of as they naturally flow. So a group of three with just the people right near you. And I'm going to invite you to engage with this gender questionnaire. So for the purposes of the activity, just want you really to discuss. Again, feel free to jot things down if you need to, but I just invite you to go through the questions on the front side of that gender questionnaire, engage with them, answer them authentically, and then we'll come back together in about 5 to 10 minutes in order to discuss these all together, okay? What questions do y'all have about the activity? Do we need more handouts? Awesome. Okay, so I think we need a couple more. Sorry about that, y'all. But share if you want to for now and just start your discussions. All right, friends, I'm sorry to break up the conversation, but I am going to invite you to come back together so we can talk about what y'all talked about. So for the purpose of the kind of audio podcasting thing we've got going on here, I am going to take a minute to read the questions aloud, and then we're going to chat about them. So I want to mention that this questionnaire, I've used it in a lot of trainings before, is from a book called The Transgender Child, A Handbook for Families and Professionals, from Brill and Pepper. And there is a copy of that book on the back table if you'd like to take a look. So the questions are, what is a man? What is a woman? How do you know? When does a person know that they are a boy or a man or a girl or a woman? Are you male? Are you female? How do you know? Are you or parts of you both? And how do you know? And This is an interesting one. Hopefully y'all got to engage this a little bit. If your anatomy changed overnight to the opposite sex, quote, would it change who you feel yourself to be? Okay, so I'm really grateful that y'all engaged with those questions in the way that you did, and Caden's going to lead us in a little discussion about them.
Thank you, Sarah. So what I think we're both kind of dying to know at this point was, what was this experience like for you? What was it like answering these questions and discussing them with one another? How did it feel? Was it easy, frustrating, interesting, or maybe even a little bit unnerving? So give us some feedback here.
I'd say all of the above.
Honesty, I love it. Yeah, what was particularly sort of interesting about it or frustrating?
I told my group, I was in Washington, D.C., and it was Gay Pride. They're very much celebrated in the district. And my daughter-in-law, who's a very colorful person, invited us all and bought tickets to a trans brunch with dancers. And it was, and everyone seemed to enjoy it, and including me. And it gave me pause to think, A, was that appropriate or inappropriate? And then it gave me pause to become conscious that given my age and background, when I look at someone, the first thing I do is want to categorize them and how I have to get over that. And it was an automatic response for me, and it's something I'm just conscious of now.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And it's not even specific to age. We all do it. When we see someone, we make assumptions about who that person is, what their gender identity may or may not be. So I'm really glad you brought that up. Thank you. So how about another question? What themes came up for you as you were discussing these questions? Did people have different opinions in the small groups that you were in about how you know what is a man and what is a woman?
Yeah. I would say we didn't get that far in the questions. We got to like three. We are not experts, all right? But anyway, what I got from what we were saying is it has to do so, at least for me, it has to do so much with our personal life experiences. I would say that for me, having a gay son has certainly created a way that I look at things much differently than I would have had I not. Working at Trinity Center has made a tremendous difference in understanding how people feel, and understanding that a bit. And so I think it has to do a lot with your own personal life experiences, and at least for me.
So one of the words you used was troubling, and I think that the first couple of questions, what is a man and what is a woman, for me were very, very troubling, because I was a person who came of age during the feminist revolution, which it wasn't a good thing to stereotype. And these questions seem to be eliciting stereotypes about what is it, a man is whatever a man wants to be, a woman is whatever a woman wants to be. And I kept harkening back to this interview that Alison Bechdel had once, where she said that she was very glad that as a more masculine woman that she was raised before the opportunity to become trans was available, because she felt like she would have been pressured to become trans. And she didn't want to give up her identity as a woman. And that kind of troubled all of my understandings of what was going on and whether trans acceptance was always a good thing or whether it could also pressure people who didn't fit into conventional femininity that, oh, if I don't fit into conventional femininity, then I must be trans.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So one thing that makes me think about, Jennifer, is just something I say all the time, is that the gender binary really helps no one.
Yeah.
Like really strictly believing in an essentialist idea of gender is not super helpful, whether you're cisgender or transgender, whether you are a cis woman trying to navigate society when there's misogyny. the gender binary is not very helpful, or whether you're a little cisgender boy who is told not to cry. That's not very helpful either, right? So it really just makes me think that as I work with trans youth in particular, I just think they're so amazing and trailblazing because they really have challenged me to get out of that binary thinking by embracing and accepting kind of who they really are. And it's really challenged me. And I think one thing that frustrates me as a clinician working with folks is that people do feel that pressure. So they might be more transmasculine identified, but still want to wear nail polish. And people judge their transness as a result of that. And that's because of all these stereotypes that you're very astutely pointing to. Caden, do you have anything to add to that? Sorry, I got my soapbox for a minute. I'll just climb on down. Okay.
No, thank you for that soapbox, Sarah. No, I think that's a really great point, right? So Sarah says the gender binary system is a system that helps absolutely no one. It's also just unrealistic, right? It sets unfair expectations of individuals who are both cisgender and transgender alike. So that's something I personally find myself wanting to push back against every day. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so comment from Ellen, and then I think for the purposes of time, we might move on, and we'll provide some definitions for cisgender and transgender. We don't want to be leaving anybody behind. Oh, Ellen, look at that, Ellen and I, right there. Okay, so.
I don't understand what you're explaining.
Yes.
We're missing what you're saying. Are you saying cis, S-I-S, or C-I-S, what?
Write it down. Sorry, that's really awkward, because I'm really awkward. Okay, so we want to know what cisgender means.
Yes.
So, does anybody know? Does anybody from the crowd want to share with us what they're understanding? Alex?
So, I'm a cisgender male, which means that was, like, I'm a male assigned at birth.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I identify.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I identify as a male.
Mm-hmm.
A cisgender male. So this.
Okay, I never heard the word before.
Wonderful. So this is exactly why we're here. And perfect definition, Alex. So when we say assigned male at birth, mostly what we mean is sex assigned at birth, which is, I like to say, your bits and pieces. So your anatomy, but not exclusively your anatomy. So there's definitely, when we think about, like, you know, chromosomes and whatnot, a lot of people don't know which chromosomes exactly that they have, but that also plays into sex assigned at birth. And when we talk about cisgender, it's that it matches. So I'm a cisgender woman. My sex assigned at birth is female. I identify as a woman. Okay? So when we talk about transgender, what do you think we're talking about there? Who knows? Does anybody in the room know what we mean by that term?
Dual somehow.
Okay, so we've got a good start here. So dual. Yes, Jennifer.
Your gender identity is different from the sex that you were assigned at birth.
Okay, so yes, so your sex assigned at birth. Doesn't match somehow. So it doesn't match. Okay. So we've got some basic terms going on here. And that's where exactly where we're headed next. Anything you want to add to these basic definitions, Caden?
Yeah, so since we had a great example over there of who a cisgender person or what a cisgender person might look like, as a transgender person, I was assigned female at birth, but I identify as a masculine person.
Perfect example. So, all of this really breaks down to the four boxes, as I like to call them. So, we're going to continue to engage with these four boxes with exactly this model. So, we have up here sex assigned at birth, gender expression, gender identity, and then sexual and romantic orientation. So before we let y'all discuss these a tiny bit, because I know we're a little bit short on time, what do folks know about any of those four boxes already in the room? Or what have you heard? Or what do you want to say about any of these four boxes and your existing knowledge about it? Yes?
Sex assigned to birth is really often more dubious than we think.
Say more about that.
Well, first of all, my daughter is a neonatologist. She comes across children who are born, and this gender is not obvious. Or they may have both gender parts, or it may not be clear at all.
Something could be enlarged.
Yes. So I think that, and it happens more frequently than I thought it did.
Yes.
So that was a shock to me. I did not realize that is more prevalent. I mean, she hasn't been a neonatologist that often long, and she, yeah.
Yes. And I think, again, with this essentialist idea of what gender is, what you just said so beautifully and what your daughter has shared with you and the intersex population really shows us that it's never as black and white as we think it is when we even think about sex assigned at birth. Thank you for that addition. That was beautiful. Anything else you all want to say or that you know already or that you want to sort of test out and explore about gender expression, gender identity, sexual romantic orientation, any of these boxes? Yes.
I think for me, in my experience, like none of them actually have to be connected in any way to make some kind of assumption about them. Like literally all of them can be contrary to our socialized understanding of what these things are. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about.
I love that. Can I ask, any examples come to mind for you? Kate and I are happy to share a couple because you like anticipated what we were going to talk about. So thank you.
Goodness. I suppose if you were a female assigned at birth, but your gender identity was male, you might be perceived as being heterosexual, but you could be gender identity as a male. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm getting a little confusing, but so yeah, I'll let y'all know.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. And I will chat from my clinical experience, and then I want Caden to jump in. Okay. So in my job at Out Youth, especially with youth 12 to 18, we see a lot of transmasculine folks. So by that, I mean it's a lot of people whose sex assigned at birth is female, but they identify as masculine in some way. So I work with a lot of transmasculine folks in counseling for youth. So some folks with their gender expression when they first come to the drop-in center is what we traditionally think of as masculine. Lots of black hoodies, y'all. Even in the summer, it's wild. So if any of y'all have teens, thank you, Sarah. Okay, so some of them have gender expression that maybe we typically think of as more masculine, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. Maybe they're not out. Maybe their parent dropped them off, and so they have to wear things that are stereotypically more female in their gender expression. Does not make their gender identity any less transmasculine. Okay? And then to your point, a lot of folks assume, and this is some parents that I work with, not all of them, but a lot of them assume, well, if they're transmasculine, then, and they identified as a lesbian initially, they are going to still be attracted just to girls. Okay? And that's not always the case either. So I've worked with tons of transmasculine folks who have been exploring their sexual orientation at the same time, and they have a variety of sexual orientations. So they may continue to be attracted to one gender or all genders, and it really isn't like dependent on what their gender identity is. So, Caden, anything you want to add?
Yes, so another aspect of it too is what Sarah noted was that often people will come in and say they are a transmasculine person but are dressing more traditionally feminine because they're not out. There are also circumstances in which someone is out and proud and very happy.
Beautiful. Yes.
And they're a trans man and they tend to dress more effeminately because that's their personal expression. So your gender identity does not always have to match as we would traditionally view your gender expression. So I, for example, prefer that I express my gender in a more masculine way, but that doesn't necessarily mean that my gender identity is solely transmasculine, mm-hmm. Right?
Beautiful, yes. So we just dropped a lot of knowledge on this room. How's everybody feeling? We're taking you on a ride, y'all. It's a roller coaster. Okay. So, yes, let's clarify.
I think that a lot of people can understand the difference between identity and expression if they think about how they raise their kids. So I only had daughters, but My girls all went through this ultra feminine phase where all they would wear is like frilly dresses, whatever, and they certainly didn't do that for me. A couple of years later, it's like, no, I'm a complete tomboy, all I'm going to wear is sweats and oversized t-shirts. And I think that you can see kids playing with how to show the world how you feel inside. And a lot of this comes from what cues they're being given. Oh, on TV, all the girls wearing frilly dresses, or now, oh, all the kids at school are now just wearing sweatpants and oversized t-shirts or whatever. But you can see that it's not something that you're like born with.
It's maybe, dare we say, socially constructed, some of these norms that we have. And I love, too, that you were vulnerable, Jennifer, and so I don't know where they got it from, because not from me.
My kids are still angry that I never showed them how to wear makeup.
They have YouTube. They're fine. So I will say that this also brings me to a point that's really important for me as a cis person, is everybody has a gender identity. Everybody in this room, even you. It's just that often cis people have been maybe less challenged to think kind of deeply about their gender identity in certain ways, unless they deviate in some way from the like stereotypical norms, like not wearing makeup if you're assigned female at birth or whatever the case. Okay. What else do we want to know? I don't want people leaving here totally confused. These four boxes, this is just an introduction. Biggest takeaways is that they are all separate and distinct for a lot of people. And I think these definitions of cisgender and transgender are hopefully a good start for people too. But is there one more thing that we maybe want to know about these four boxes? A clarifier or something that we haven't covered? Yeah.
I'm not even sure what the question is, but can we talk a little bit more about the sort of identifying and identity language around gender identity versus sexual orientation?
Okay.
Sort of the identifying words that seem to be either confused or confusing for many of us for many different reasons.
Sure. Flip over your paper for me. Hopefully this will help. You set me up. I mean, I'm not paying people to like set me up for transitions, but it's happening anyway. So you have a little bit more of a description of the four boxes here. So hopefully that will help clarify. And we have a couple of words in there, right? So when we think about sexual orientation, romantic orientation, it's kind of the traditional lesbian, gay, bisexual. Some people are using the word pansexual these days to indicate that, hey, there's more than two genders, kind of getting out of that binary. Although bisexual is a really important identity for some people too, so we don't want to dismiss that. So those are some of the words we commonly associate with sexual orientation. And then with gender identity, Caden, you want to talk a little bit about that?
It's a long list, but just to name a few of them, we've mentioned trans masculine people, trans men, trans women, trans femme people. There are also non-binary people as well, which is something we really want to stress today, especially because I just found out today's the International Day of Non-Binary People, so that's great. So non-binary people generally do not identify on the binary, so They neither identify as a man or a woman. I hesitate to say as something in between because that implies that there's still these like two poles of being, which I don't think is helpful. But just note, non-binary, not man, not solely woman, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and non-binary is a very big umbrella term in and of itself and encompasses a lot of identities. It can, for some people, but maybe not. Right. Yeah, Alex.
Clarifying, and I don't know if you brought this up, but a clarifying way that helped me understand it is that in Native American languages, there are five genders, but like some of them have like five genders.
Yes.
Where beyond the binary, like you could identify as one of five different things.
I love that. Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up, Alex, because oftentimes I think we conceptualize gender because of this binary idea on a straight line, and I like to describe it as a circle with like infinite points in between. So I heard a video once of a lovely non-binary youth describing it as a constellation. So as many stars as there are in the sky, that's as many ways as we can think about our gender. So wanted to mention that too. Yeah, last question.
Could you help me understand the queer sexual orientation?
Yeah.
That's the one that I think I've got all the others, but that's the one that I'd like to understand better.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, kind of like non-binary, it can be an umbrella term that people kind of use in different ways. I will say I use queer myself because I feel like it's just a good way to describe in an umbrella way the fact that I am not straight and heterosexual, but the fact that I'm married to a trans man. Sometimes people are like, well, aren't you straight? And I'm like, well, you know, maybe, but not really. Like, I'm pretty queer when it comes right down to it. So, and it's been used a little bit as a political term as well, I will say, which is something I kind of like about it. Like the way Caden described kind of queering Christianity or queering Jesus, it can kind of be used as a verb as well. So hopefully that helps a little bit. And that, again, is just from my personal experience. I will say a lot of younger folks in the community, though, because LGBTQIA++ is just like so long. I'm not complaining. Everybody should be represented. But sometimes saying queer and trans is just like a shorthand way to represent the community that some people feel really comfortable with. Some people don't, but some people do. Is that helpful?
Very. Thank you.
Sweet.
Sarah, would you say that queer is solely, though, about sexual orientation, or is it also about gender? I mean, are you saying really it has become a sort of, that I don't fit into these neat boxes in terms of gender identity and or sexual orientation?
I think that might be a nice way to put it. Okay. Absolutely. And there are people who identify specifically as genderqueer, and so that's something to mention as well. So, I keep saying this, but for the sake of time, what a rich conversation, how amazing. But I really want to talk about pastoral considerations for these issues that we've been grappling with and talking about. So, Caden's going to take it away on that.
Yeah, so pastoral considerations, there are hundreds that we could talk about today. But as Sarah says, for the sake of time, we're going to limit it to just three. The first one I want to talk about is the reality of isolation. Isolation for many trans and other LGBTQIA+ or queer people is a reality that's faced every single day. It may in part be because of a lack of community support or access to community support. So for example, I didn't meet another trans masculine person until years after I had come out. My world was exceptionally small, and the impact of that meant that I often felt very alone and isolated in that experience. We see this also in the lack of representation of trans people in film and literature. Now, in the last 10 years, that's started to get a lot better, but there's still a lot of work left to be done there. The loneliness, or this loneliness, is only made worse by the fact that as a trans person, you are always navigating cisgender spaces that often look like the church. Isolation is also the result of suffering in silence, of knowing that there is something different about you, and yet you feel as though stepping into your identity is something that is wrong or shameful. These feelings of shame in a religious setting are promulgated by what I would view as harmful theologies. These are theologies that suggest that being queer is somehow antithetical to Christian identity. Whether a church says God hates gays, or a church says hate the sin, love the sinner, or if a church says all are welcome here, and yet there's no access to bathrooms, or people aren't allowed to get married, or people aren't allowed to step into leadership positions. These are all theologies and practices that are harmful and ultimately are exceptionally isolating of entire groups of people. The next reality I'd like us to consider is the reality of violence. According to the National Transgender Discrimination Survey, transgender youth especially experience extremely high rates of discrimination, harassment, and violence. The survey found that participants who expressed their trans identity or gender nonconformity while in grades K through 12 reported experiencing alarming rates of harassment at 78%, physical assault at 35%, and sexual violence at 12%. I think it's really important to take a moment to note as well that trans students of color indicated experiencing even higher rates of harassment and physical and sexual assault than the white trans students did. There's another reality of violence to consider as well, and that's the violence that is defined by Reverend Carrie Doring, who is a Presbyterian minister and assistant professor of pastoral care at ILIF School of Theology. She suggests that violence is something that's not just limited to physical experience, but violence is also something that is spiritual and something that is psychologically experienced as well. Violence, according to Doring, includes all acts of overpowering. So, for example, in the context of trans identity, violence can include not being permitted to use the restroom that aligns with your identity. It includes being misgendered over and over and over again. And it includes being removed from leadership positions, and on and on and on. And then the last thing I'd like us to focus on is the reality of poverty. So when I was first prepping for this presentation, I was thinking specifically of poverty in terms of economic poverty, right? Not having a job. But then as I thought more about it, I realized there are so many forms of poverty. And what I want to touch on is relational poverty. Often when you come out, you lose friends. You lose family. You lose colleagues. You lose institutional support. Suddenly what you had before is no longer there. And this again speaks to that isolation. And then there's the economic reality. In many states in the U.S., you can be fired for being trans. You can be denied jobs for being trans. You can be denied housing for being trans. So being a houseless person is very common for many trans people, not all, but many people experience that at one point or another. So what can a single church do? What can St. David's do? A lot of these responses are things that will respond not only to isolation, but to violence and to economic disparity as well. So the first thing is conversation, having conversations, doing what we're doing right now at least once a month. Not once a year, let's make it something that we can talk about over coffee. It doesn't have to be with a mic in our hand, right? There are two reasons why this is excellent. One, it destigmatizes the experience. So say someone's closeted because they're afraid of coming out and they're worried about the shame that goes along with that. If it's something that we're constantly talking about, it removes that shame. The other thing is access to bathrooms. Y'all, I'll tell you, the first thing I do when I enter any new space, especially a church, is I scout out bathrooms. Where can I pee? Are your bathrooms accessible to people, to trans people, whether they want to use the men's room or the women's room? Are they affirmed in using the restroom that aligns with their identity? Is there access to all gender restrooms? Where are the all-gender restrooms? Do I have to go up to the fifth floor, around the corner, and to the left to find this all-gender restroom? Or is it located next to the other restrooms as well? So a good way to deal with that is labeling. Let's get a map, something that would be helpful. Lastly is celebrating through rites and rituals. So right now we're talking about meaning-making. there are significant points in our lives that we have a liturgy for, right? So for weddings, and then if we don't have a liturgy, we usually make it up on the fly. So we've got weddings, we've got birthdays, anniversaries, confirmation, all of these beautiful things that we get to celebrate. Well, let's celebrate those monumental moments in trans lives as well. So an example would be, let's see, when I first started HRT, and HRT is hormone replacement therapy, I began injecting testosterone in my leg. I was so excited about it that I jumped in my car and I circled around the dairy loop at our college listening to Superman. Meaning making, marking significant points. Now, I'm not suggesting that we go to the sanctuary and walk around in a circle and listen to John Williams. No, we have other rituals and rites that we can do. So the rite or the liturgy of renaming, which is something a little newer. So honoring these things, holding vigils for the Trans Day of Remembrance, for the Day of Silence, participating in Pride, being there as an ally, and then opening our doors, opening our fantastic classrooms. And one last note to make, and this has to do with responding to violence, is be aware of microaggressions. So a microaggression, an example would be misgendering someone. Misgendering someone is very harmful, and it happens, right? I do it. We all do it. So the key thing here is not to make assumptions when you meet someone. Don't assume their gender. A good way to deal with this is on our name tags to have a space for pronouns, and everybody put your pronoun down, because we all have them, right? And so I don't suggest you go up to someone you don't know and say, hey, what's your pronoun? That's not helpful. Don't do that. But what you can do instead is go up to them and say, hi, my name's Caden. My pronouns are he, him. And that's an invitation, right? It's not, I can tell something's different about you. So now I need you to inform me. And if you do make a mistake, own it. Name it. Apologize. Move on. The more you stress out about it and make a big deal about it, it really becomes about you and not about the person who's been harmed. One church cannot solve all of the problems of prejudice facing LGBTQIA people. They can't. However, one church can become a brave space. It can be an affirming and supportive space, which is often half the battle. I take it, Sarah?
Sure. I don't think I can follow that. So I think we need a round of applause for Sarah. In the spirit of not having a ton of time left and some of y'all wanting to go to the 11:15 service, perhaps, just a few quick notes. If you want to talk to us and me specifically more about mental health considerations, I'm happy to do that. I'll stick around for a little bit of Q&A afterward for folks who would like that. I do want to stress, just to emphasize what Caden said, not misgendering people, really big deal. It's really detrimental to mental health. So if you can do anything, like getting people's name and pronoun right, is really, really important. So just wanted to mention that quickly. And then what Caden said about how do we continue this conversation? You have some resources on your handout, which you're welcome to take with you. And one thing I would invite us to consider as a community, and I'll certainly bring this to the proper authorities and channels, but there's this Christian conversation guide. It's from Human Rights Campaign. Frankly, I don't love everything about Human Rights Campaign, but I think they have some really lovely resources, and this is one of them. So it's basically an opportunity to gather in some small groups and continue to have these conversations. So if as a result of this there would be interest in that, we can certainly gauge that with the help of Ellen and Rebecca and think about how we can keep this conversation moving forward. How much time do we actually have? 0.0 minutes? Yeah, stick around. Thank you.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.